Messenger by Mary Oliver. My work is loving the world. Here the sunflowers, there the hummingbird, equal seekers of sweetness. Here the quickening yeast, there the blue plums. Here the clam deep in the speckled sand. Are my boots old? Is my coat torn? Am I no longer young and still not half perfect? Let me keep my mind on what matters, which is my work, which is mostly standing still and learning to be astonished. The Phoebe, the delphinium, the sheep in the pasture, and the pasture, which is mostly rejoicing since all ingredients are here, which is gratitude. To be given a mind and a heart and these body clothes, a mouth with which to give shouts of joy to the moth and the wren, to the sleepy dug-up clam, telling them all over and over how it is that we live forever. My work is loving the world, begins the poem. A few stanzas later, Mary Oliver comes back to that idea when she says, "Let me keep my mind on what matters, which is my work, which is mostly standing still and learning to be astonished." Standing still and learning to be astonished. To me, this is the essence of cultivating gratitude, and I believe that it is the most important spiritual work we can do. To approach life from a standpoint of gratitude is to be open and receptive to the many good things surrounding us and the way we are supported in all that we do. It takes practice to see with the eyes of gratitude. It requires a new habit of attention, intentionally becoming aware of all the concrete ways in which the world supports you each day. And there is an element of humility in recognizing these blessings that come to us. 50 years ago, psychologist Abraham Maslow proclaimed that gratitude is a central part of what he called self-actualizing individuals. He defined gratitude as the capacity to appreciate again and again, freshly and naively, the basic goods of life with awe, pleasure, wonder, and even ecstasy, however stale these experiences may have become to others. Medical doctors have found that when people consciously experience a felt sense of wonder, thankfulness, and appreciation for their life, their parasympathetic activity increases. This is the part of our nervous system responsible for relaxing, controlling stress and hypertension. Thankful people recover more quickly from surgery with fewer complications and even tend to live longer. There is no doubt that thankfulness is a good thing for body and soul. But how do I will myself to be grateful just because I know it's good for me? I'd be grateful if I had more money, was more physically fit, if I could play the guitar better, or would I? The billionaire Howard Hughes was asked in an interview how much money it would take to make him happy, and he replied, "Just a little bit more." Brother David Stindl-Rast is a Benedictine monk, a contemporary mystic, and author of a book called Gratefulness, the Heart of Prayer. He says, "We notice that joyful people are grateful and suppose that they are grateful for their joy. But the reverse is true. Their joy springs from gratefulness. If one has all the good luck in the world but takes it for granted, it will not give one joy." Brother David explains that gratefulness is more than a momentary emotion. It's a profoundly spiritual and powerfully healing state of being. He tells of one exercise that a teacher gave him. The teacher said, "For 1 year, I want you to write 2 notes of gratitude before you leave your room in the morning." Easy enough, thought Brother David, until the teacher added, "And you have to experience the gratitude." We all know how to say thank you, and hopefully we find reason to do so multiple times every day. But it is a deeper practice to generate the experience, the felt sense of being grateful. I don't know about you, but it is not always easy for me to muster up that feeling. There are some days I just don't feel grateful for much. Cognitively, I recognize that I'm just caught up in my day-to-day hassles, but I can't seem to think my way out of that downward spiral. Greg Kretsch is a Zen Buddhist teacher. He explains that to experience a sense of heartfelt gratitude, you must develop a practice. Without practice, there is no development of skill, only an idea. You cannot become a grateful person just by thinking that you want to be grateful. Rather, you need to develop a new habit of attention, to notice the concrete ways in which the world supports you every day. And we can then develop a new habit of speech, expressing our gratitude to others. He goes on to say, the more I think I've earned something or deserve something, the less likely I am to feel grateful for it. As long as I think I'm entitled to something, I won't consider it a gift. But when I am humbled by my own mistakes or limitations, I am more likely to receive what I am given with gratitude and a true sense of appreciation for the giver as well as the gift. The dictionary says entitled means to believing oneself to be inherently deserving of privileges or special treatment. Entitlement is a form of spiritual sickness. It separates us from other people and it blocks us from feeling wonder and joy. Like a dark cloud, entitlement blocks the light of joy from entering our hearts. The only thing you and I are entitled to is love. And that is our birthright. Love is the essence of who we each are. All the rest, stuff and junk that comes and goes. When we experience love with another being, we remember in some small corner of our being that we are all one. A study published in the journal Social, Psychological, and Personality Science last September examined the relationship between gratitude and humility. They defined humility as a low self-focus, secure sense of self, and increased valuation of others, and said that gratitude was marked by a sense that one has benefited from the actions of another. The paper describing the study is entitled An Upward Spiral Between Gratitude and Humility. And here, for the scientists among us, is a description from the abstract. In the first experiment, participants who wrote a gratitude letter showed higher state humility than those who performed a neutral activity. In the second experiment, baseline state humility predicted the amount of gratitude felt after writing a gratitude letter compared to a neutral activity. Finally, in a 14-day diary study, humility and gratitude mutually predicted one another, even after controlling for the other's prior level. They conclude by saying our results suggest that humility and gratitude are mutually reinforcing. Humility and gratitude. Gratitude and humility. But how? How do we move our mindset from entitlement to humility and to gratitude? Greg Kretsch, the Zen teacher, believes it is a matter of shifting our attention. A number of years ago, he wrote this exercise, and it's a little bit dated, see if you can catch that, to help us see how we need to adjust our thinking. Your eyes are still closed when you hear the beeping of your digital alarm clock go off on the small wooden table next to your bed. Without opening your eyes, your arm naturally reaches over to press the black snooze alarm button, a motion you repeat just about every morning. But this morning, nothing happens. The beeping continues, and it's getting a bit irritating. So now you open your eyes and watch your index finger press hard on the correct button. More beeping. You hit another switch, which should just turn the alarm off completely. Still more beeping. In a fit of frustration, you finally pull out the cord from the electrical outlet. Ah, quiet at last. Maybe it's time for a new clock. A few minutes later, you find yourself about to get up from a brief stop on the toilet when the toilet won't flush. I'm really starting off the day in great shape, you think. You get dressed and start the coffee maker to give you a bit of a jolt. But when you come back to the kitchen, there is hot water and coffee grounds all over the counter. Now you're beginning to think that this is a bad dream and you must still be in bed. But it's not over. You open the door to grab the morning paper and quickly check the news before leaving for work, but no paper. You look to the left, to the right. Did someone take your paper? Did they forget to deliver it? No time to speculate further. Have to get to work. As you drive down the highway to work, you're thinking about how rough the morning has been when suddenly the person driving in the next lane changes lanes, cutting you off and almost running you off the road. When you arrive at work, your heart is still racing and you take every opportunity to share your extraordinary morning with your colleagues. What a relief it'll be when this day is over. If you've ever had a day when everything seems to go wrong, you can probably sympathize with the subject of this story. And it appears understandable that the person would feel frustrated and perhaps have a sense that the world is a pretty unhappy place and unfriendly. To begin to understand the relationship, though, between attention and gratitude, we need to turn the story around. So imagine a day when the alarm works perfectly, the toilet flushes just the way it's supposed to, the coffee maker produces a hot, aromatic cup of coffee, your morning paper is waiting outside the door, and no other car crashes into you or cuts you off on the way to work. Now what happens? Do you arrive at work feeling overwhelmed with gratitude? With an attitude of appreciation for all the people and things that are supporting you on this glorious morning? Probably not. But why not? Couldn't we begin to notice and appreciate all the ways that our life is supported? I think this kind of practice means noticing every morning when the car starts. Thank you. And every morning when hot water comes out of the shower head. Thank you. And every day, I am so grateful that so many of my loved ones are alive and thriving. Thank you. Every moment when I'm not in physical pain. Thank you. That I have so much love in my life. Thank you. I'd like for all of us to have an opportunity to be filled with that felt sense of gratitude this morning. So I'm going to invite you all to close your eyes for just a moment and call to your own mind some of the little things in your life that you may have been taking for granted. Call to mind your cozy home, the beloved people and animals in your life, work that you enjoy, the beauty, opportunities to be creative, the people who love you. Breathe that feeling of humble gratitude into your body. Allow it to fill you up and your heart to open wide. Now I'd like to invite you to speak aloud into this community what you are thankful for. So when you're ready, share just one or two words that symbolize what you're grateful for. And together, let us fill this amphitheater with gratitude for all the blessings in our lives. As you're moved. My dog. Family, healthy body, keep them coming, friends, serving this community, guitar, for all these many blessings and all of those that are still waiting to be recognized. We give thanks. Donna Markova says that gratitude is like a flashlight. If you go out into your yard at night and turn on the flashlight, you can suddenly see what's there. It was always there, but you couldn't see it in the dark. So as we gather with friends and family on Thursday around whatever table you find yourself, I hope that you can remember to take a moment to simply stand still and be astonished. May your eyes be opened to the goodness that is present in your life, the people who love you, the beauty that surrounds you, the delicious food that nourishes you. Your treasure is not someplace else. It is right here. It is in your own heart. Allow the warmth of these blessings to fill your heart and spill out of you. Share. This is the work that matters most. This is the work of loving the world. Let us do it together with humility, with gratitude, and with joy. Amen, and blessed be.